Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Aki Katayama, a food writer and a director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day on the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my good guest. And my guest today is Jamie Ryder, who is a certified sake sommelier, as well as a Japanese culture enthusiast. Also, Jamie publishes a Japanese culture-themed magazine called Yamato Magazine, which explores Japanese culture from a variety of angles. And we have had many guests in the past talking about Japanese food scenes in the biggest cities in the world, such as Tokyo, LA, London, and Paris, but we don't know too much about how Japanese food is gaining interest in other cities. And Jamie is based in Manchester, UK. Manchester is still a big city, the sixth largest in the UK, but by no means not the same as the metropolis like London. In other words, it's a great example to see what is happening with Japanese food culture in smaller cities. So today we'll discuss how Jamie got into Japanese culture, what is happening with Japanese culture outside the metropolis, how Jamie gained knowledge of sake and got certified as a sake sommelier in Manchester, what should happen for Japanese sake to be enjoyed more outside global cities, and much, much more. But before you start, Japan is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Also, I have a quick announcement. There is an upcoming live webinar organized by Japan Society in New York on Wednesday, December the 7th. And the title is Seasonality, Superfoods, and Other Secrets of Japanese Cuisine. And I'll be moderating discussion between two Japanese food experts. Yumi Komatsudaira, the author of Japanese Superfoods, learned the secrets of healthy eating and longevity the Japanese way. And Nancy Singleton Hachizu, author of Japanese Farm Food Japan, the cookbook, and other cookbooks. And so she actually joined us a while ago on this show, and she's amazing too. And it will be a fun event to learn about Japanese traditional food culture that is even more important now to keep us healthy in the modern life. So thanks to Japan Society, tickets are free. So please go to japansociety.org and go to events and programming or calendar and to register. Again, the title is Seasonality, Superfoods, Other Secrets of Japanese Cuisine on Wednesday, December the 7th. It's a live webinar, so I hope to see you there. Okay, now let's start a conversation with Jamie Ryder. Hello, Jamie. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Akiko. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I've been listening for a while, and it's great to dive into the beauty of Japanese culture with you today.
Thank you so much. And I'm really enjoying your beautiful British accent as well. So welcome to the show. To get to know you, first of all, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Always one of my favorite questions. So I am from Manchester in the northwest of England, and I will describe myself as a big foodie, but my food habits growing up were quite varied because on my mum's side, I'm Italian, and on my dad's side, I'm English, so quite a mixed food upbringing, so I'm always going to go into my wheelhouse and my comfort of pasta and pizza, because that was very prominent on our dinner table when I was younger.
Interesting. So, and then how did you get into Japanese culture?
Through many different rabbit holes, I'll say, but the beginning was from a very young age, I was fascinated with anime and cartoons, and that really helped to me learn more about the culture on that really sort of basic level. I didn't really understand what was always going on, but the particular way the stories were told through the anime and the cartoons really resonated with me. Then when I got a bit older, I started learning more about the world, and Japan for me was always this really romantic, faraway place that just seems so different from life in the UK. And I should say I have never been to Japan yet, but I always had the idea in the back of my mind, if I can't go to Japan, then I can bring it to me. So I did that through discovering more about the history, reading, and then that eventually led me to do quite a bit of creative work around it, which I'm still doing to this day.
I've been reading your magazine, Yamato Magazine. I've been really interested how personally you've been really analyzing and absorbing Japanese culture. So, well, we'll talk about it in a second. But you know, I'm just always curious. I grew up in anime in Japan. You know, in the world of anime, it's just natural. But to your view, what is special? Like, you know, is that something like completely outside this earth, or what's the impression of anime?
I can only come at this from like my interest in pop culture, really, because I'm a huge superhero fan. And I think anime to me was perhaps the genesis of that. So the first show that I ever really got into like that was Dragon Ball Z, because to me there was these larger than life characters who were in this very fantastical setting, and by digging into a lot of different animes I find that they always touch base on some really universal human concepts that I think resonate with people of all ages. And I think that was probably distilled into me at that very young age, and then by looking back at it all these years later, I can kind of understand the psychology of it now and how it really connects with people on from that younger demographic as well.
Interesting. Right. Okay. And then, so you have a web magazine called Yamato Magazine, I just mentioned, which you started about 3 years ago. And so I think we've been talking about how, you know, gradually you are gaining your knowledge and interest in Japanese culture. So what is Yamato Magazine, and why did you start publishing it?
For a multitude of reasons, but the main one to me was because it really helped with my development of the culture, and I come at it from quite a few different angles. So it's from the food and drink perspective, it's from mental health and philosophy as well, because I am a huge philosophy nerd, and I really find the depth of the culture fascinating from that perspective, in the sense that you've got all of these very simplistic sounding words, but even one word can have multiple meanings as well. And it's been such a joy to be able to write about these topics and break them down from more of the well-known aspects of the samurai culture and the temple and the travel aspects, and then going at it from the food and the drink as well, which is where my interest in sake developed from as well, through all of this creative work.
So you have different pages, but so what kind of articles were most popular in the past in the magazine?
So this is really interesting. It's quite varied, but I think still to this day, the most interesting or most engaged article is around a gentleman who was a tattoo collector with the Yakuza. His name escapes me right now off the top of my head, but to me that's just a very fascinating subject that when researching it, I tend to look at it from this more of a quirky perspective. But equally, the poetry section is doing quite well through haikus and tankas, and also the mental health orientated content as well, particularly around certain concepts from Japanese culture that seem to have a lot of resonance in the West as well.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, just to mention quickly is that, you know, tattoo in Japan is really something not like casual. And you can't wear tattoo to go to onsen because it's totally associated with Yakuza, which is very, very serious. And I think it's a big social issue. And the Japanese police having a hard time dealing with them too. So, yeah, so... The tutu is really a big art too, as much as it's scary, and it's interesting that you wrote about it. I like this tanka. Tanka is like a short, it's kind of poetry, and I really enjoy reading those because it's really nice, quick, but you get to the point. And I really suggest listeners to take a look. And also you have like sake reviews and very different, diverse content. So how did you determine? You just decide you feel like writing it and then you just come up with something to interview or just write up?
Yeah, I come at it from a couple of different angles, really, because I have been writing since I was a kid. So I suppose it's like second nature to me in that respect. But I always think about how I can educate people through different lenses, really. And I'll take an example with the sake and the food stuff. I like to compare that with pop culture as well. And a series that I've come up with is called Flights of Fantasy, where I focus on particular characters from fantasy fiction and can imagine what stuff they might drink in the sake or a shochu lens. And the psychology behind this for me is that it needs to resonate with the journey of those characters as well. They can't really be just chosen at random, because when I think of that, I think of like pairings on a traditional menu in a restaurant, really. There's always a story behind that. And I think there's something so powerful about trying to tell the stories of drinks through a character that is well known in the public eye. And an example that comes to mind for that is Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones. I wrote a series about different types of sake that she would drink, and that was well received because from what I've heard from feedback as well, that seemed to be quite unique, and it just helps to introduce a different angle into the sake industry but also make it fun for me at the same time.
Right. Yeah, I liked your magazine because like you said, it's a kind of woven and cultural place. And rather than just go try to find something about this type of sake, it's a more knowledge. But yours more sort of, you find multi different aspects of Japanese culture you probably didn't expect before visiting the website. So yeah, great job. And congratulations.
Thank you. That means a lot, because to me, it's just trying to further as many different cultures as possible. I suppose that comes from the European background, really. I do like to thank my mum for giving me a more open-ended perspective of the world.
Right. All right. So we will take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll discuss how locally Japanese culture is spreading outside London, called Manchester, and how Jamie got certified as a sake sommelier outside Metropolis. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hi, I would like to make a toast. Imagine yourself setting the table in mouth-watering colors and wares, wearing that beautiful apron that flows like a gown, curating a playlist that evokes a loose, limber atmosphere so you can dance while you cook your way into a world of play and mischief, extending a warm welcome to your guests. Dear listeners of Japan Eats, I am Mariana Velasquez, author of Colombiana, the cookbook, and I live by the ritual of the table. And that's why I created a line of hosting ware, Casa Velasquez, as an extension of my life, extolling that sense of home, retiring any critique of the moment, and fully embracing your cheeky, imperfect, unbridled self. Come with me to casavelasquez.co and reimagine your hosting essentials so we can set the tone for your table and home. Casa Velasquez is a mutual supporter of Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on HRN, Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Aki Kotema, and my guest today is Jamie Ryder, who is a certified sake sommelier as well as Japanese culture enthusiast based in Manchester, UK. So as I said, you are based in Manchester, UK. So in our show, we tend to have guests from big cities like Tokyo, New York, London, Paris. But you told me there is a lot of interest in Japanese culture outside those obvious places. So first of all, how do you describe the city of Manchester to someone who's never been there?
Well, the easiest way to put that lens onto it is we have two of the most famous football or soccer teams in the world. You've got Manchester United and Manchester City, but you also have a really thriving music scene as well. Back in the early 90s, there was the concept of Madchester and bands like Stone Roses, Oasis. So a lot of creativity, and there's that idea of having Northern Soul as well. That's indicative to the north of England as well. So there's a lot going on, and there's just so much of a thriving cultural environment here in the city that I just love to share on a world scale.
So do you think it's really, it's not a smaller city at all? It's more like a global oriented, open-minded place?
Absolutely, because I think there's always the idea that outside of London, either Birmingham or Manchester is the second largest city in the country. And certainly over the past 10, 20 years, just to take the food and the drink scene in the city, it's just booming, because you can throw a stone in the city and you could literally go anywhere over the world with the amount of soul and dedication that all these chefs and these bars are putting into trying to uplift the local community.
Right. So it's like the food scene sounds like culturally diverse as London. But is there any, like, definitely local food culture, like Manchester, unique food culture?
I would say it comes down into certain areas of the city, really. An example that comes to mind is we have the second largest Chinatown area outside of London, and that's where you tend to get a lot of the sake scene located. But you can also go further out into a place called the Northern Quarter, which is, to my mind, like the Camden Town of London, for example, or it might be more of the quirky places in New York. And again, you get a lot of creativity going on there as well. But in terms of wider Japanese culture within the city, a great festival that happens year to year is the Doki Doki Festival. And that is a great celebration of people from multiple angles that are interested in Japanese culture, and they just come together to share stories, uplift the combination of the UK and the Japanese connections together as well.
Interesting. Yeah, is it an annual event? The Doki Doki is an annual festival?
Yes, it is. And it was really great for it to have come back earlier this year, because obviously with the pandemic, things were just a crazy time. But we had a really great turnout, and it's nice that it's a non-profit event as well. So all of the proceedings tend to go towards different charities that are focused on Japan. And you do get a lot of people who are just trying to share like great initiatives coming out of the country as well.
Right. Okay, so sounds like, is it organized by a Japanese associations or something like that?
So it's mostly organized by English people at the moment, but you do get a lot of Japanese organizations coming on board. So one that comes to mind is Aid for Japan, which of course helps with the earthquake and the tsunami proceedings. That is just good to have people coming back to that every time.
Right. Well, I'm so glad because I thought it was like Japanese government funded or something, but locally people want to discover more about Japanese food. So this is exciting. And dokiyoki means your heart is pumping for excitement. So yeah, that's great. So does that happen in August every year?
I think it depends on the season, actually. Sometimes it is in August, sometimes it is in September, but it's great that you get people from different walks of life. I remember going to it this year and I gave a talk about mental health and Japanese culture and how you can just apply quite basic principles, but there are also people who are talking about it from that wider pop culture and anime lens as well. And what is nice to see is that you just get people from all walks of life, really. And to me, it's about trying to, you don't necessarily have to have gone to Japan to actually appreciate the culture either. It's trying to give it to people who don't really know much about it and try to break down perhaps any existing stigmas or people who have only got a certain perception of a place.
Interesting. Okay, and then another thing, you are a certified sake sommelier, and that's exciting. So how did you study sake? Are there good local educators that you could go to?
Yeah, indeed there are, and it combines with my interest with Yamato magazine, that story. So I had a really great intro into the sake world in the sense that I didn't really have any preconceived notions or anything about it. I just didn't really know much about it. So I wanted to be able to write about it. I went to a tasting with a education program in Manchester called the Northern Wine School, run by a gentleman called John Callow. He gave a great tasting that helped me learn more about it. And then that opened up the rabbit hole for me. So I started writing the reviews on the website, reading books, and then a nice full circle moment. John actually ended up being my educator with the Certified Sake Sommelier program. And then that's where I started that. I also, this year, completed the International Kiki Sakeshi program to include the more sales-based and the marketing side, which also dovetails quite nicely into my interest in marketing and copywriting for drink brands.
Right. Well, actually, I looked up Mr. John Callow, who's leading that Northern Wine School. So he's really like wine expert, and he expanded to sake, right?
Correct, yes. So it's really interesting with John. He did start with that wine background, but what I have noticed, particularly on the Manchester sake scene, is, this is my personal opinion, that we are flying the flag for the rest of the UK, really, because traditionally a lot of the sake stuff is focused in London, but it's great to see it expanding out slowly. You've got places in Birmingham as well who are doing great things, but as I look at myself as an ambassador of the city, in the sense that it's great just to tell people what's going on in the sake world in the north and try to further connections in different ways.
Right. So, well, this sounds like, you know, you have Chinatown where people like get exposed to, like Asian food culture. But how popular is Japanese sake in Manchester? This is like a really big question. But do you see sake at many places like retail shops, or how ubiquitous is sake?
Yeah, I see it's steady growth, honestly, because we still do need to do a lot more education, same as London. But some great places that I would always recommend is a place called The Sparrows, which is run by a powerhouse of a lady called Cassia. Quite a unique concept. It's Tyrolean Polish food with sake as a sake bottle shop. They're also going to open up a dedicated sake bar soon where more tastings can take place. But that is a space that is leading the charge. We've also got more of a combination-based approach, which I have found in the sense that there will always be a different cultural-led food and the sake is paired with it. There's a place called Peter Street Kitchen, which does a great Mexican menu paired with Japanese drinks. There's also a great Pan-Asian restaurant as well called Nami, which is combining really high-end Asian dishes with sake and shochu as a pairing as well. But as we develop, I would love to see more standalone sake concepts. And an idea that I would really love in the future is if we could have some sort of UK sake scene where people from up south and up north just get together and just try to celebrate the growing need and the innovation that is going on around the scene.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's really fascinating. Actually, I looked up, the Sparrows, and it's run by a Polish lady, and it's basically a European dumpling shop, right? So I don't know how, do you know how the owner, Kasia Hitchcock, got
that's
into
right.
sake?
Mm-hmm.
Just like, it's amazing selection of her online shop I saw, but then it's a like totally dumpling shop in European style. So do you know the origin of her interest in sake?
Yeah, so I believe that she spent a lot of time working in London and then she wanted to set up on her own for different reasons. And you are right, it is such like a unique concept, isn't it, with that European-led food approach. And then the sake just pairs so well with it. And to me, I love that cultural crossover, really, because to me, that is how you bring the best aspects of East and West together and tell like a unique story. Because I believe with Kasia, she's very proud of her heritage and she likes to bring that in to just elevate the category in her own unique way.
Right. Well, and you also mentioned that the Mexican and Japanese, and I'm completely amazed by this open-mindedness. And maybe because it's in Manchester, you don't have any like traditional educated approach, like a Japanese food. The chef comes here, you have to drink this way, that way. But in Manchester, there's more freedom. People get creative and just enjoy the delicious pairings. And I really found it very exciting. And in fact, I got lucky to have a dinner at a special dinner, joint dinner coordinated by the Italian embassy and a Japanese embassy near New York. And they served sake and wine for each course. And surprisingly, sometimes Italian food goes well better with sake and vice versa. So yeah, this is exciting. And I hope I can just get to this, the Kasia Hitchcock's, because they're the Sparrows, and then try some sake with her spatzel and some European dumplings.
Oh yeah, highly recommended. It's really great food.
Right. Okay. So, and based on your certification and experience living in Manchester, do you have a sense of what type of sake is popular and how people are drinking it?
I think, again, to lend to your point, it's just that open-mindedness, because to me, it's just still that general education of saying sake is something that is highly versatile and it's just calibrating it to local tastes and particularly around wine, because a fine wine is quite a big selling point in the city. And towards my personal taste, I'm quite diverse. I do like the drier styles sometimes, but the sweeter styles, whereas generally I think people just need to be led across to something that really calibrates to their own taste. And something that I would love to see in the future as well is to have some kind of Manchester-based or northern-based sake brewery, because there are a lot down south, which is amazing, but it's always great to see things on a local level as well, if possible.
Right. And do you have any other good retail shops than the Sparrows that you can get the sake you feel like drinking?
So there's an interesting concept coming up called Three Monkeys, which I'm not sure has an opening date yet, but I do believe that that is going to have another type of sake retail experience as well. But it's just really great to see this steady growth, because even when I first started writing Yamato magazine 3-4 years ago, the growth, we've had like just a boom of Japanese restaurants and these concepts anyway. So we're getting there. It's just, championing it day by day.
Right. Yeah, it's and also I think I really respect the United Kingdom, because that's the country who kind of supported the French wine culture, I heard. And without British, French wine industry probably didn't thrive like now. And also, you know, it's the home of Scotch and also great beer, not to mention. So there's a very, very interesting drinking culture in England or the UK. So yeah, I'm very curious how the sake is going to be, you know, taking what kind of direction, but hopefully in a bigger, better place to be drinking sake. Yeah, but do you have any industry friends that gather friends to hang out and then talk about sake in your community?
So I did mention John before. He's a great guy to chat to, Cassia as well. But further afield, I always like to chat to sake retail as well. In the pandemic, I did a great online tasting with the founder of Sorakami, Robin Sola. He's somebody I'd always recommend checking out. I am just going to signal boost as many organizations in the UK that I can think of. You've got Tengu Sake with Ollie. You've got Satomi, who runs the international Kiki Sakeshi course. So it's great. It's like, as I said, I think we are getting to a place where London and the North are slowly getting together now. It's just constant communication. That is the key.
So the distribution is good in terms of, like, you know, the brands that you want to drink are fairly easily available?
I would say so, yes. I mean, purely off the top of my head, a brand that really got me into sake generally is Akashi Tai, and where I think they are doing very well is because they have a very striking logo. The story behind it is very easy to understand, and the bottle labels are always in English. So it's just that very like wine-led approach where the ingredients are straight up front. And from a branding and a marketing perspective, I just find that fascinating, because the story is key to getting across the ingredients and why people should drink it. And I think certainly a trend I would love to see continue in the sake industry is having more of that narrative-led approach, where you can break down topics that, you know, in this industry might not seem complicated, but to the general consumer is just having that educational-led point first through the copy on a label or even on a menu, where the story tells the ingredients.
Right. And like, for instance, in New York, almost every liquor shop I go to, I see one or two sake labels, like in the last decade or two. So do you have that kind of same scenes you can see in Manchester?
I think it's indicative of all of the UK, really. It's not just in Manchester. London is doing a great job of having the labels translated more into English as well. So that is just a trend I'd love to see continue.
Right. So I feel very hopeful. So, but how do you foresee the future of Japanese sake in Manchester in like 3, 5, 10 years?
Oh, that is a good question. I mean, as I said, I would love to see some sort of brewery concept develop someday. I just think it's still the educational standpoint as well, having a couple of dedicated bars that get some good reputations. We do have, what I do love about Manchester is we're all very collaborative, and there's a very famous gentleman called Sasha Lord, who's been in the UK Manchester hospitality scene for a long time, and he's very open to new concepts. And I think it's really reaching out to these key figures who probably have a lot of sway on a local level and who can actually try to champion these particular categories in a very down-to-earth way as well.
So what do you think should happen for Japanese sake to be enjoyed even more widely, hopefully, like places like Manchester? But do you have any suggestions for sake breweries and distributors?
I mean, I'm always a fan of seeing things on tap, really. I've never had sake on tap personally, but that would probably really go well down in Manchester, because we are a very pub family orientated kind of environment. And I think from a selling standpoint, that could be quite appealing, and that would certainly appeal to a certain demographic. But equally, having a lot of different tasting events as well, that might not necessarily just be about sake. If you can compare it to some kind of football event, for example, that would go down well in the city as well, because obviously it's tapping into that local lore that Manchester is associated with, or with the Manchester music scene as well. But further afield, I think just from that psychology point of view, it's trying to look at the history of a particular location and seeing how you could weave that story into sake, and just have that combination of pairings, whether it's with the food or if it is with that wider narrative.
Yeah, I want to see it. And you know, the football game of Manchester United serving sake on top. That'll be exciting. Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of sounds like a joke, but I think that's the way to go, right? Because it's the culture people drink. It's a tap. And it's just a feeling of celebrating something and then enjoying the taste. That's the style. So we all have to localize the mindset when we enjoy something, like especially alcoholic beverages. They have some, you know, there's ambient stories behind it, and that makes everything different. So yeah, maybe we'll see that in, I don't know, like 5 years, I hope.
Yeah, I would be with you, Akiko, on that, because it is that mindset thing, certainly. If you can just sometimes forget about the labeling or the bottling and then just say, you know, I can have sake from a tap. Imagine how cool that would be, where it's just, you don't even have to think about it. It's just like an accepted thing on that same level with beer.
And also sustainable. So no bottling, no labeling, just a tap, and then people just to share it. So very sustainable way to transport too. So, and also I'm curious that you are also into awamori, right? Which is Okinawa's local shochu. So, I mean, I shouldn't say shochu, but shochu style, different distilled alcohol. So why do you like awamori?
Yeah, it's really interesting, because I just love really unique flavors. And in relation to sake as well, I'm also interested in raising awareness of shochu and awamori. And I did develop a couple of free resources that are available on Yamato magazine, just as a beginner's guide if people are interested. But again, to me, it's the story of that culture, because obviously Okinawa has got its own unique culture away from Japan. And to me, awamori is the champion of taking that culture further afield.
Right. So, well, hopefully you can now travel to Japan and then you can stretch your trip to Okinawa. All right. So you have a lot going on in your life. So what are your plans and dreams?
Oh, too many to name for just this podcast, but off the top of my head, I would love to continue to run sake tasting events in Manchester and on a local level, and on a further afield level as well, just for my own education. Also continuing my creative projects within the sake industry. My day-to-day job is as a marketer and a copywriter, and I am focused on helping Japanese-inspired brands share their story and their communication through the written word. And something I can't really dive too much into at the moment, but I'm focusing on another big creative project that will again have sake in there, that will be a good educational resource as well. So it's just changing hearts and minds through sake, one bottle at a time.
Sounds awesome. Yeah, so do you work with sake breweries for tasting events?
So I tend to do one-to-one tastings at the moment in an online environment, but as I continue to develop in the industry, that's something that I would love to look more into.
Right. So sounds like maybe it's time for you to go to Japan, and you may not come back though, I have a sense.
Oh yeah, that will be very dangerous when I finally touch down.
Right. Okay. So where can we find your updates online and on social media, and also find the Yamato magazine?
Yeah, indeed. So you can reach me at yamatomagazine.home.blog to see all the Japanese content and projects that I'm doing. I also run a Substack newsletter called Drink to That, which is more of a general newsletter where it's celebrating categories from all over the world as well. You can also find me on LinkedIn at Jamie Ryder, and the social handles are Yamato Magazine on Instagram.
Great. All right, so I am excited, so excited about what you're doing and what's happening actually in Manchester, which is, I think it's a very free way to develop sake culture. And I'm just curious, when I get a chance, I'm going to come and visit you to share some sake.
I look forward to that day, Akiko.
Right, great. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jamie.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And again, I just love the concept of the podcast. It's just great to hear so many diverse voices in this community and championing different cultures from all over the world.
Right. Well, thank you so much. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikotema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and it's always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Spengen, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates, to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.